introduced from the Omani Pacific.
Conference record has joined the conference.
Tito Alejandro, Chief Operating Officer. Parag Sachdeva, CFO. And we are also joined by our colleagues in the U.S. from Del Monte Foods, Nils Lommerin, CEO, Dave Myers, Chief Administrative Officer, and Paul Miller, CFO.
Thank you, Iggy. Good morning to all in Asia and good evening in the U.S. The key highlights from our first quarter FY 2017 results. EBITDA of US$23.7 million was 20% higher. U.S. subsidiary recorded slightly lower sales, but mainly driven by non-branded business. We will touch base on this more. But it increased the market share across major branded categories. Del Monte Philippines and S&W continue to deliver strong performance, both on sales and bottom line. Our deleveraging plan with preference share offering is on track. Now, on the outlook side, I would like to emphasize that the group will continue to be profitable for FY 2017, especially our second to fourth quarters are seasonally stronger. We will continue to strengthen the core business, especially in the U.S. My colleagues Niels and Sito will talk more about this. In the short to midterm, DMPL plans to improve the financial performance also through cost optimization programs, leveraging on procurement synergies and optimizing G&A costs, particularly in the U.S. Our preference share offering is imminent. Moving on to the next slide, on the DMPL 1Q FY 2017 group results summary. Sales of US$466 million is lower by 3%. Our U.S. sales are down by 6%, out of which volume decline accounts for approximately 3%. Most of the volume decline is coming from USDA or government bid business. Our branded retail business continues to perform strongly. Philippines has grown at 14% in local currency and 9% in U.S. dollar terms. S&W in Asia has grown by 12%. Our joint venture in India has also grown at a strong 14% in local currency and 8% in U.S. dollar terms. EBITDA of US$28.6 million is up 25% from US$22.8 million. Operating profit of US$11.7 million, up 103% from US$5.7 million. Net loss at $5.9 million, substantially lower than last year's US$9 million loss. Would like to remind that first quarter is seasonally the least profitable quarter for DMFI or the U.S. business. All of the above profitability numbers are without one-off costs and are versus last year. Just dwelling a little bit more on the seasonality, our sales in the U.S. have seasonality, and Q1 historically is the lowest with 19 to 21% of full year sales. Second and third quarter are the highest generally, and which includes pipelining for Thanksgiving and the Christmas holiday season. Our lower sales also reflect on profit performance, where DMFI historically incurs a loss in first quarter. On the next slide, would like to quickly take you through the non-recurring expenses or one-off costs. Non-recurring expenses are mainly on account of two main restructuring initiatives. US$3.4 million is for severance related to organization optimization, that will give us an annual savings of US$9.5 million. That has already been undertaken in the first quarter. We also incurred an incremental US$1.5 million for the closure of North Carolina plant. That was undertaken in Q4 of last year. Moving on to slide 9, we'll share with you the detailed first quarter FY 2017 results. First quarter sales at US$465.5 million is 2.8% lower than last year, mainly due to lower sales in the U.S., partly offset by strong sales in Philippines and S&W Asia. This will be explained more in the turnover analysis. Our gross profit is lower than last year, mainly driven by planned and back-to-normal promotional spend in the U.S. Coming off a low base last year since we had product shortage. Would like to emphasize that these promotions were planned and have benefited us in increasing our market share in retail, particularly in veg and chicken broth categories. Our operating profit at US$6.8 million, higher versus last year, also includes US$4.9 million of one-off cost as enumerated in the previous slides. Operating profits are higher mainly due to strong operating results across Asia. This performance is better than planned despite higher marketing and trade promotions versus last year. Marketing spend, just to remind you, was higher than last year by US$4 million, and promotional spend was significantly higher too in the U.S., which will enable us to continue with the momentum ahead of the holiday season. Our loss from Feel Fresh, our JV in India, in which we own 47%, is lower than last year, mainly from strong performance of the processed food segment. Net income for the quarter has shown improvement as explained and is lower loss versus last year. Net debt at $1.88 billion for the quarter has shown is higher, and it's marginally higher due to higher inventory levels that we are carrying in the U.S. Our gearing ratio has improved at 532% despite higher net debt, and that's mainly because our equity base increased, resulting from higher retained earnings carried over from last year. Moving on to slide 10, we'll give you a flavor of our first quarter turnover analysis. Americas is constituting 75% of total group sales and declined at 6.3%, mainly due to unsuccessful government bids which were carried forward from the second half of FY 2016. We also had lower sales in private label and food service business. We had unfavorable price variance resulting from normalized promotional spend on our retail business as compared to last year when we were on allocation. This will really hold us in good stead ahead of the holiday season, as we gained 3.1% additional market share on veg category on a year-to-date basis. Overall, our volume of branded retail was up, with DMFI's branded vegetable products higher by 17% and collagen broth by 32%. Now moving on to Asia-Pac region, at US$111 million, it grew at 11.4%, with Philippine market, which constitutes almost 68% of our total Asia-Pac sales, growing at 14% in local currency and 9% in U.S. dollar terms, driven primarily by packaged pineapple, culinary products, as well as beverages as a result of new advertising campaigns. Food service channel continued to outperform the market, growing by 28% in peso terms. sales of S&W brand also grew at double digit as a result of canned fruit in North Asia on the back of improved distribution. Europe sales on a very small base at $4.4 million declined by 18.5%, but that's mainly because of supply, lower supply. We expect that the sales will recover and be better in the second half. With that, I would now request Niels to take us through the coming slides.
Okay. Thanks, Parag, and good day to everyone. I'd like to talk about the U.S. business, and I'd like to start with and focus on the Del Monte brand. The Del Monte brand in the U.S. alone is a $1 billion-plus brand, and we've got strong leadership branded positions in several categories. If you look at our share in packaged core vegetables, it's 26%. We're the number one branded player in the U.S., and our closest competitor is about one-third our market share. Our market share is also up in vegetables pretty significantly versus prior year, as we've got to a normalized promotion schedule and made significant improvements to our packaging and the quality of our products. In packaged core fruit, we have a 34% share, which is number one in branded share. And in cut tomatoes, our market share is 10%, and we're number two in that that category. Although the categories we participate in canned have been declining slowly, we've actually been able to offset some of that reduction through innovation, which has been driving higher market share. For example, on our vegetable cans, we've added pull-top ends to almost all of those. We've added sea salt to our products. Just recently, we've added a green Del Monte tab as opposed to a what was a traditionally gray tab. We've almost completed our transition to non-BBA cans, and we are moving as quickly as possible to ensure that all of our products will be non-GMO. So we had higher market share, as I said, in vegetables and fruit, and even though the categories declined. The trends toward fresh, natural, and organic, although create some headwinds for us, also create opportunity. You know, Del Monte is known as a very high quality, 95% of our products are all natural, and we think we can leverage that as we go forward in the marketplace to compete against fresh, natural, and organic products effectively, particularly through innovation and entry into adjacent categories. In terms of financial results, our sales were down 6.1% to $351 million. The impact of that was, and the cause was, unsuccessful bids both with USDA and in some cases with our private label and food service businesses. The good news is that our very profitable canned vegetables and collagen broth businesses performed very, very well, with vegetables up 17% and collagen up 32% respectively. We had lower gross margins of 15.5% versus 19 due to normalized trade spending. What happened a year ago was the industry was short product, so there was no reason to promote, and everything was sold at full list. This year, the industry was in balance, and some product lines we had excess inventory, so we moved our promotional programs back to a normalized level. And that's the difference in the 15.5% and 19%. We also incurred some cost by closing a plant in North Carolina of $1.5 million. In addition to that, we continue to focus on making our overhead structure as lean as possible. We did have a reorganization this quarter, which will ensure that as we go forward, our cost structure is lower and our operating environment is more efficient. Exclusive of the one-off expenses, we had $4.9 million in one-off expenses, which contributed an EBITDA of $7 million and a net loss of $14.8 million to the group. What I'd like to do now is spend some time talking about innovation. For 15 years, Del Monte's been selling fruit cups, 4-ounce fruit cups, which has really been targeted at kids' lunch boxes. And what we're doing now is we're moving up and we're focusing our fruit offerings to adults. So we very recently rolled out fruit refreshers. They're in larger containers. We've got some very unique varieties like pineapple and passion fruit and fruit water, which is done within the group. We've got mandarin orange and coconut water, grapefruit and orange, pomegranate fruit water, and grapefruit and pink guava fruit water. These new products will be very focused on adult females who feel that they'll be successful. They're off to a very quick start. The customers have been very excited about it, and the early sales seem to be very strong. We'll know more about that at our next call in December. The way we're focusing, we're trying to be very efficient with our marketing and very targeted. So we're doing an awful lot of digital marketing, and we're advertising in the places where we feel our target audience, as I said, is adult females, spend a bulk of their time reading or watching or listening. We also try to do a lot of PR and social media, which creates significant awareness at a very low per-person cost. We've had events in New York and San Francisco, and we plan on continuing to do that and continuing to promote the product in a way that is going to be efficient, but also the broadest audience possible to get their exposure. And finally, the other important thing is shopper marketing. Most customers, or I should say about half of the customers, make their decision when they get to the shelf. So shopper marketing is critical to ensure that you are on the shelf, you're in the right place, you have the end caps, you've got displays, you've got the right partnerships. And we feel that with all the major retailers in the U.S., that with our new fruit refreshers, we're in a great position for consumers to identify the product and purchase the product very efficiently. So we're bullish at this point, and we'll know a lot more in December when we talk to you in terms of repeat purchases.
Okay.
I'd like to turn over to Cito.
Thank you, Niels. I'll talk about the rest of our business. First is on page 17, the Philippines. As you can see from the chart, very, very solid market shares across all the categories. We have maintained our leadership. And the two segments that have driven this growth are the modern trade and the emerging convenience stores. The convenience stores is of specific importance in a market where the millennials are growing. Second page tells you about our performance in the Philippines, 14% in peso terms growth and 9% in U.S. dollar terms. All the categories are growing. Specific channel that has given us a lot of growth is food service, driven by increased penetration in the key accounts as well as convenience stores. We also launched a new product that's in page 19, and that's bringing in a lot of news for the culinary segment. It is new version of our spaghetti sauce, and we call it creamy and cheesy, and it has had great appeal among children, and the movement has been very strong, in fact, beyond expectation. The next page, 20, I just wanted to highlight our very strong beverage business. As you know, our Fit and Right, a product that caters to young adults positioned on weight management, has continued to grow behind new advertising. We have also had great growth in our Del Monte juice drinks. And during the summer, we had two new flavors in our Tetra Pak, and that allowed us to increase consumption and trial over the summer months. Finally, in beverage, page 21, the most significant development so far has been on our Del Monte Heart Smart variant. As you know, this is an innovation that aids in cholesterol reduction. We were able to get the endorsement of the Philippine heart surgeons that this is a good product that helps lower cholesterol. And we have leveraged this in advertising, in digital, and across all trade segments. Page 22, going now to Asia and the Middle East. We continue to have strong momentum in this area. As you know, consumers are now moving towards less processed and more of natural food, and that has helped us expand our S&W Sweet 16 Fresh Pineapple. We have also begun e-commerce and digital in China through JD.com, and we will soon be going to Alibaba. And as far as fruit pricing is concerned, that has been favorable to us. Given the shortfall in Thailand, we expect that prices will continue to be favorable for another 6 to 12 months until the supply situation in Thailand and likewise in Indonesia stabilizes the middle of next year. Moving on to page 23, further developments in Asia and the Middle East. One of the significant developments was in China, where S&W tied up with Burger King to supply them the pineapple for their pineapple hamburger product. We have also partnered with a brand in China. It's actually in page 24. Good Farmer. Good Farmer is one of the biggest distributors, you know, of fresh produce in China. In fact, they're one of two Zespri distributors in the whole of China, and one of the biggest in banana. And now they're in pineapple with S&W, so we supply them our fresh pineapple, and we now have penetrated the retail segment in China through a co-branding agreement with them. Just a quick one, and page 25 on Field Fresh India. Our Field Fresh operations continues to grow, and the share of loss in the Field Fresh joint venture for Q1 was down to just 300,000, down from the 400,000 the prior year. The most significant, I would think, to highlight here is our Q1 sales have been up 14%, and it continues to roll this year. We've had higher sales and production efficiencies resulting in Field Fresh continuing to generate positive EBITDA for the quarter. A quick one on sustainability on page 26. Just wanted to make mention of that. This is an important undertaking for the company. And as you can see that we have taken significant activities in this segment, no, across all our areas in the Philippines where we have business and where we have presence. Page 27, just to let you know that we've been fortunate to have been awarded like the DMPL CEO Award that was given to Mr. Campos, our CEO. We also won the best annual report again in Singapore, held last July, and we've ranked 32 or top 5% amongst the 631 Singapore-listed companies in governance and transparency. And we've ranked number 28 among the top 100 largest Singapore-listed companies in the ASEAN Corporate Governance Scorecard last April. Turn you over to Parag.
Thank you, Sita. On slide 28, I'll give you a brief update on our planned issuance of perpetual preference shares, which are U.S. dollar denominated and will be listed on the Philippine Stock Exchange. The launch is planned in calendar year 2016 and is subject to all regulatory approvals and market conditions. With that, very pleased to inform that we have received the approvals from the Philippine SEC as well as BSP, which is the Central Bank of Philippines, and are now awaiting the approval of its listing application and the offering from the PSE. As you can appreciate, this is the first U.S. dollar denominated preference share that will be issued in Philippines and listed on the PSE, so the platform is now being set up. The PSE has approved and endorsed its amended dollar-denominated securities rules to the SEC for the latter's concurrence. We expect to raise $360 million with an initial tranche of up to $250 million and the balance issuable within 3 years. This will result in a further improvement in leverage ratios and bring it down to 500 percentage plus levels that you saw to almost 2.5 times or 250%. So very healthy. And we, as I mentioned in the outlook, the issuance of preference shares is imminent. On slide 29, I would like to recap on Q1 results and our outlook. On Q1 results, EBITDA of $23.7 million, that is 20% higher. Our U.S. subsidiary had slightly lower sales, which were mainly driven by non-branded business, but would like to emphasize that we increased our market share across major branded categories, particularly veg and chicken broth. Our Del Monte Philippines and S&W business continues to deliver very strong performance, and deleveraging planned with preference shares offering. On the outlook, the group will continue to be profitable for FY 2017, and as explained, we will get the same through strengthening of the core business as well as plans to improve financial performance in the short to mid-term through optimizing our gross margins, which are going to be driven by procurement synergies and optimization of G&A cost as well. And lastly, would like to conclude by saying our preference shares offering is imminent. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Parag. We would now like to open the floor for questions. Please state your name when you ask your question.
Hi, Iggy. Sunny Ordonez from BDO Trust.
Hi, Sunny.
Yes. Can we just clarify again the share in the Asia-Pacific region in the turnover analysis? How many percent is Philippines?
68%.
68%. And can you give me the figure for, let's say, a historical for fiscal year 2016 and 2015?
Sure.
Just for the Philippines?
Yes, Philippines. Because I am assuming that the difference would be with S&W. Or is there another subsidiary there?
Oh, I think if you're taking a look at the growth, I think you're referring to how the business is growing outside of the Americas, right?
Yeah, it's
the DMPL, right? Yeah. If you will look at that, we have the number, but I'll summarize it for you. The key driver of growth, right, is a combination of the Philippines and the S&W Fresh business.
So, Sita, there's only two growing the Asia-Pacific, or are there other subsidiaries which I'm not aware of?
Okay. To answer your question on Philippines, our business has grown 14% in local currency from 3.1 billion pesos to 3.6 billion pesos.
Just for the quarter, yeah.
This is just for the quarter.
Sorry,
3.5 billion.
3.5 billion.
3.1 billion to 3.6 billion, which amounts to 14% sales growth.
Okay, for one.
Okay. Our S&W business has grown at 12%. Okay. And
okay.
That's from $16.2 million to $18.1 million.
Okay. That historically, the revenue sharing for Philippines and S&W for 2016-2015, is it similar? Or because the Philippines is growing faster, I'm trying to get the growth from the past as well.
I would say very similar.
Okay.
Yeah, very similar. Generally, the S&W business is growing off a smaller base and is growing slightly faster than Philippines market.
Okay, so that's why they're similar. Okay, understood.
Yeah.
In fact, if you take a look at the Philippines, no, if you look at the CAGR in the past 5 years, no, it's about
7%. 7%. Kager. And
yep.
For S&W, 5 year.
I think it's exponential because of the growth of the fresh.
It's more than double digit.
Yeah.
Double digit, okay, double digit. Okay, thank you.
Hi.
Are there any other
this is Fred Chua from Abaco Securities.
Okay.
Hello?
Go ahead, please.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Fred Chua. Hi. I'd like to ask about specifically for the Philippines, whether you've also put into your outlook the possibility of a sugar tax here in the Philippines. We're wondering how much of an impact would that be specifically for your Philippine business, whether it would entail additional costs on your part or simply passing on the tax to your consumers and the like. Kasi part of the House resolution includes exemptions specifically for 100% concentrate fruit juices. So I'm wondering if that would be the track, or whether for your other drinks, the other drinks business would have to comply with the taxation.
Okay, let me answer it by first on the bill, on the House bill. I understand, and probably you also understand, that this is for those that have sugar. And when it comes to 100% juice, there is no tax, right?
Yes.
That is your understanding too, right?
Yes, yes.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, it will impact us in a mixed manner, no? If you look at our portfolio right now, about 65% of our business is on pineapple juice, 100%. So to me, that one will not be impacted by this tax. You know, this tax is really for the carbon for the sodas, no? The target here is the sodas, no?
Yes.
So for that 65% of our portfolio, I think regardless of what is the final house bill, we're insulated from that, no? Because that is really no sugar there. It's just fruit sugar because it's 100% juice. On the 35%, we'll have to see what the market reaction will be, because right now, as you know, the Philippine Beverage Association is taking a position paper on this one, on how to address this bill. No, so we will see. No, so whatever would be the appropriate action, we will take on the 35%. But for sure, before we take on any pricing action to pass it to the consumers, we will see first to what extent we can cut our own costs, right? We wouldn't want to dampen the consumption because of pricing moves. On the other hand, if all the other competitors are going to increase their price, what we will do is see how we can leverage our 100% juice, where we will not take our pricing and therefore see whether we can pick up some business relative to the rest of the industry, who will eventually have to take up their price.
I see. When you mentioned 35% of... Yes, that's clear. Just wanted the clarification on the 35% of your portfolio that can potentially be affected. You're simply referring this to the Philippines alone, correct?
Yes, yeah. That is really fit and right. All the other 202 juices that we sell that are not 100%, like Four Seasons, mango juice, and all of that stuff. Plus, if I don't know if you're aware, we also offer juices in a tetra pack format, no? And in that format, all of them are fruit juices. They're not. We don't have any 100% juice on that format.
Okay. Thank you so much.
To further answer your question, the impact is not in our plan and is clearly work in progress. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, this is Kelly from Credit Suisse. Hi. I have two questions. One, could you share more on the outlook for the U.S. business and when you're expecting it to turn around? And secondly, could you also elaborate a little bit more on your leverage position? What's your target and how we're going to get there?
Let me start, just Paul Miller. Let me start with the outlook for the U.S. business. And the leverage we'll pick up, have someone else pick up. Our second quarter is set up very well. The key for us is this is the holiday season where we are preparing for the Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays. We have lined up all of our major trade promotions at this stage of the game. Very optimistic about the branded retail business and where it's heading. And from, you know, with a successful holiday season, that pretty much will make our year work very well. As Neil's mentioned in his discussion, we have some new product out there, the fruit refreshers. This will be a year-round product aimed at the healthy snacking category. We think this will have a big impact for the first ones out there in a 7-ounce cup on a branded basis. We're looking to continue to provide some additional innovation in that area. So we're very bullish about the balance of our fiscal 17 year. The question about debt.
Okay, on the debt, just to finish it off, we are expecting to optimize our inventory positions, particularly in the U.S., and expect to gain or reduce inventory, which will have a consequent impact on debt by almost $100 million. And from a group perspective, our debt levels with this, if we achieve this $100 million approximate reduction on working capital, we should be lowering it from $1.8 billion to $1.45, which includes issuance of $250 million from preference shares as well. So give or take, roughly around $1.45 billion is where we plan to end.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Hello?
Hi, Iggy. Elfie here from DBS.
Hi, Elfie.
Just one or two questions on your America business. You have reduced margins in the America business, especially for the packaged fruit and vegetable segment. So that's both a volume and a deliberate price promotional impact. Is that how we can look at it in terms of the pricing? That's why the margins are reduced versus last year.
Yes, versus last year when we were on product allocation, we did not promote the product. This year we're turning to the promotional activity with the aim of increasing share. And as Parag mentioned in his discussion, we were able to increase both our core vegetable shares as well as our collagen shares as a result of the additional activity. There is a price to pay for that, but we think this sets us up for a very strong the balance of our year.
Yeah. Okay. So going forward, can we expect a similar run rate that is probably lower than last year in terms of margins going forward?
We will see improvement in our margins going forward, and that would really come from a much higher sales volume in the coming quarters.
Okay, which means that for pricing wise, once you have won the market share, you'll probably increase by a little in terms of the pricing, or reduce the promotion in terms of the pricing to get a higher.
Paul explained it. We have normalized our trade spending. Last year, we had to really freeze the same as we were on allocation and there was a product shortage, whereas this year, we have consistently on with our trade promotion plan with all our major customers, and which is positioning us very nicely. So our trade promotion spend will be more or less at the same level, whereas last year, we had to really accelerate the same to gain share ahead of the holiday season in Q2 and Q3.
Hi, this is Nils. I would make one comment. We're not out there. Our shares are up, but we're not out there buying share. Our shares are up because we're offering a superior product. As I said earlier, we've moved to non-BPA, non-GMO with many of our products, sea salt, which is a unique offer for them. So we're not out there buying share. We're out there putting a better product on the shelf, which is helping us to drive sales and maintain margins.
Just to sum up, we will maintain our margins for the U.S. business more or less on the same lines as last year.
Okay, so it should normalize and creep back up to what it was last year going forward.
Yeah. Just to remind you, you need to also realize we are having some impact on our margins this year, really from converting our cans to non-BPA. Plus, we also had to reduce our pack for this year, which is resulting in under-absorption and has an impact of roughly $8 to $10 million or 60 to 70 basis points on our gross margin. Despite these two, we will hold our gross margin to last year's level.
Okay. Has this exercise been completed or it is still ongoing and we can expect it to kick in the next few quarters?
What exercise?
Are you referring to non-DPA?
Yes, yes, the conversion, the 8 to 10 million impact.
Yeah, non-DPA is a work in progress. In some of our business, we've made full conversion. In others, we're in the midst of making that conversion.
We have to get rid of the...
And the conversion is in our plans.
Yes.
So it's covered in our plans in the guidance that we just mentioned.
Right.
Yep.
And one thing you will to remember, even if we pack product, which we will this pack, you know, last couple of months, in non-BPA product, we'll be selling off the balance of last year's pack for a period of time before the new products hit the shelf. So there will be a lag between when we pack a non-BPA versus when the non-BPA product is on shelf.
Okay. Okay, for my next question is to understand your decline in packaged fruit and vegetable sales in the U.S. How much is a volume impact? How much is a price impact? And how much is the discontinuation of the low-margin U.S. DA bit contributing to all this decline?
The key driver of that, as I mentioned earlier, is the fact that we had counted on some USDA bids, which we did not receive. Those are very low margin, in some cases break-even bids. And then you have private label, which is also a bid business with very low margins. So our sales are down because we have lost both private label and USDA business, which is bad news. The good news is the products which really are the heart of Del Monte, you know, packaged fruit, veg, and tomatoes, our shares are up, and those brands are performing very strongly in the marketplace.
Okay.
Look at the shares. For our core vegetable, year on year, we're up 16%. And as we mentioned also, our broth business is up 30%. This is the volumes on against those products. So these are the areas where we're focusing and we're seeing good results.
Mm. Okay, that's all I have.
So
thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hello.
Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. This is Avik Parat from Tor Investment Management. On that U.S. business mix, given that you've lost the low-margin business for the USDA bids and the private label business, shouldn't we be expecting an improvement in margins for the overall U.S. business?
No, because we have to sell that product, so we're just diverting that to other channels, which are also low-margin channels, because we have to get ready for next pack. So we're going to move that product one way or another. It's just not going to be profitably. And the continued miss, you know, will be in the non-core businesses.
Yeah, what's important to realize is we have to essentially speculate and pack based on what we expect to sell to USDA and through private label. If we, which happened recently, our expectations for sales were significantly higher than what actualized. Therefore, we had a significant amount of unsold product, which would have been sold at low margins in the USDA or through private label. We had to go find other channels to sell that product, which ultimately would be low-margin channels as well.
A key example of that is we just put a bid in for 1 million cases of product over the back 6 months of the year at very low margins just so that we could get rid of the excess inventory for cash flow purposes and also to go into next year with a balanced pack.
I see. So on a going forward basis, how much can you kind of reduce your inventory given you will, do you still expect to bid for the USDA and private label business on a going forward basis?
We do. Both the USDA and the private label businesses are businesses that we can will continue to participate in. 2 years ago, they were extremely profitable for us. This past year, they haven't been. The real downside with those businesses is they have quite a bit of variability. But many years, they are, frankly, very, very profitable. And we just need to manage the variability between the good years and the bad years.
We have entered into an exercise where we are going to evaluate the USDA business, the private label business, and basically the speculative bid basis. And we will make a decision between now and the next few months as to whether we want to stay in those businesses or we want to get rid of those businesses, increase our gross margin, and reduce our infrastructure, our manufacturing and distribution infrastructure. We've actually are bringing in a third party to help us with that business analysis and ultimately the manufacturing matrix analysis. So you're right. We're not sure whether we want to continue in that business, and those decisions will be made over the next 2 or 3 months and will affect our PAC next year.
Understood. And how much capital do you think is tied up to this part of the business?
Our private label business is about $250 to $300 million in NSV, and our USDA business on average usually runs somewhere between $75 and $100 million. So we have a significant amount of working capital tied up in these very low margin businesses that we'll be evaluating.
Great. Hey, my next question is on the preference share issue. Can you just give more details on where that process is? Have you appointed bankers to kind of gauge demand for this issuance? And when do you think this issue kind of comes out? Is it like the month of October or is it towards year end?
This is our best guess at this point of time. We have the underwriters that we are working with to answer your question. And we expect to undertake the book building process in the month of October.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah, it's just to be clear, it started, it's underway, but it will gain momentum in October.
Thanks.
Any other questions, please?
If there are no other questions, we'd like to thank you for joining.
Go ahead, please. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Elfie again from DBS. Elfie. Well, we have clarified the U.S. Sales decline as well as the gross margin decline. Just want to understand a bit more about your operating profit decline for your operating loss increase for America. So even if we add back the 1.5 million, the loss, the operating loss is still larger than previous year. But mainly it's from packaged fruit and vegetable. Is this the impact from higher promotional activities? And how much has your promotion increased by, if that is so?
The promotional spend increase is impacting us by 300 to 350 basis points, roughly on a gross margin basis.
One year ago, there was the markets are very tight, and all the product we sold was at full list price, whereas this year the market has excess supply, and we're forced to run promotions to move that volume.
Yeah, okay. But on an operational basis, I'm sure the operating cost for fruit and vegetable has increased. Just wondering what are those items that are contributing to the higher OPEX expenses?
It is pretty much the trade promotion spend, which is driving the change in gross margin. It's and that's where it is. It's not on the cost side that we are seeing any major impact. As I said, anything to do with non-BPA will kick in the subsequent months as we are still selling the old inventory from the last year's pack.
Oh, okay. So you're saying that for operating cost-wise, as a percentage of sales, they are pretty stable?
Yeah. I would emphasize one more thing. Our marketing investments are higher in this quarter by almost $4 million. So that's one more reason why our operating loss is somewhat lower than last year. And that is just because we are preparing ourselves for the holiday season and launching and investing in the right categories that is our priority.
Okay, understand. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Any other questions, please?
If none, we'd like to thank you for joining our conference call. Good day and good evening to you.
Thank you.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.